What should you know about breastfeeding? On the glass ceiling, we discuss ways to destroy invisible barriers, invisible obstacles that prevent women from achieving social, economic, cultural, and political equality in our society. Today, we're revisiting a conversation, or continuing a conversation that we started last week, Wednesday, about improved outcomes for breastfeeding mothers. Last week was breastfeeding week. Large numbers of new mothers breastfeed their babies, largely because of sensitization about exclusive breastfeeding. Also because formula don't cost, you know? But breastfeeding, like I said last week, still remains a difficult process. There's not enough support from society, from our institutions, for mothers who are nursing. And joining me again to discuss this, the challenges of breastfeeding, the ways to improve the situation, is Dr. Chioma Nwakama Akanno. Welcome back to the Glass Ceiling on Hard Facts, Doc.
Thank you, Sandra. Pleasure to be here again today.
Lagos, we also want to hear from you. What questions do you have about breastfeeding? What questions do you have about exclusive breastfeeding? What questions do you have about neonatal nutrition, about the health of baby and mother? We've got a doctor in the house. She's a public health professional, so she'll have most of the answers that you're looking for, but she can't give you diagnosis. So please don't call and ask for a diagnosis. You have to actually visit a hospital for that to happen. Now, last week, we talked about the benefits of breastfeeding. We talked about why public health authorities have been so energetic about promoting it. We also talked about formula as a healthy alternative. But Dr. Chioma said that, you know, your child has to be fed, period. So you can start with formula while you're trying to figure out the breastfeeding part of things. Chioma, for those who didn't listen last week, could you do like a very brief summary about the benefits of breastfeeding and why public health professionals continue to push for exclusive breastfeeding?
Okay, thank you very much, Sandra, for the opportunity again. So quickly, as I said last week, the benefits of breastfeeding span across various sectors of life, not just for the infant or for the baby, also has benefits for the mother, and of course benefits for the economy, or for the economy. So for the babies, of course, the primary thing is nutrition is guaranteed. The breast milk contains everything the child needs to start life. And this also includes micronutrients and antibodies. Antibodies are there to help the baby fight infection. So from the colostrum, which is the very first milk that the mother expresses within the first five days, you know, of post-delivery, that's the colostrum, the yellow, very enriched milk that comes before the transition milk about 10 to 15 days later. So whether the colostrum or the transition milk, the important thing is that the breast milk contains everything the child needs, including water, you know, for the first 6 months of life. And that's what breastfeeding is, giving breast milk only for the first 6 months of life. And then WHO asks that you can continue up to even 2 years after 6 months, while introducing solids, you know, safely to your child. The benefits, of course, helps the baby to fight infections, help the baby's mental growth, helps the baby's physical growth. The babies who are well breastfed are seen to be more, they get to meet their milestones easier and faster, and they have less likelihood of coming down with childhood diseases, which are implicated in child mortality. Example, diarrhea diseases, pneumonia, you know, and the like. So children who are breastfed are less likely to come down with such diseases in, you know, under 5 years. There are a lot of benefits. There's not enough time, but for the mothers, of course, aside the bonding, there's a bonding that's, you know, there's mother to child bonding. Then for the mothers too, there's also that benefit of contraception, which I mentioned last week. And I also emphatically stressed that while it provides that kind of protection for mothers, a contraceptive, you know, protection, it is not reliable.
Because I can just imagine my listener saying, okay, so I don't need to use contraception because if I'm breastfeeding. So please, I needed to stress the unreliability part of it. Stress it.
It's not reliable unless you want to come back from your maternity leave with another pregnancy. So it actually works. That's the truth. But there are different factors that come into play. And I said, for women who are actively, exclusively breastfeeding, and in that exclusive breastfeeding, you are regularly pumping or breastfeeding, you know, so there are just various factors. So we just like to say, back up your backup, as you said last week, Sandra, back up your backup. You could use a modern contraceptive option. Even condoms work. You don't need to overstress it, overthink it. Just play it safe. That's the important thing. Also, it has benefits. Health benefits for the mother. It prevents or reduces the risk of osteoporosis. That's like a bone disease in a woman, which comes in later life most times. And then, of course, breast cancer, ovarian cancers are reduced because of reduced estrogen exposure during breastfeeding. So it also provides that protection for women. There are various protection that it gives. Also, for the mothers and the parents, not just the mothers, even the fathers, it reduces the reduces hospital visits, because when your child is healthy, it reduces the number of nights you have to sleep in the hospital, or the number of times you have to miss work just to take your child to the hospital. So as the child is healthy, the family is healthy, the parents are relaxed, the economy is thriving, and also financially, when the child is breastfed, as you said in your intro, Sandra, you know, the cost of formula is expensive. So, I mean, breastfeeding is very economical. So, it has that benefit also. And as I said, when the mother is healthy, when the parents are thriving and mentally stable, they get to give back a whole lot to their work, and which ultimately shows up in our economy. You know, the Nigerian economy can boom just from breastfeeding, you know. So those are just a little of the benefits, not all, because of time that breastfeeding offers.
Now, I want to stay on that point you raised about work specifically and bring up a tweet that you tweeted. You said, quote, exclusive breastfeeding 6 months plus, maternity leave 3 months or less, workplace, no pumping rooms, no creche, kid intolerant, insufficient contact with child, reduced pumping time, stress-induced supply drop. How will it work? Because the mathematics is not mathematicking, end quote. It's a very thought-provoking tweet. And I want you to unpack it for us, right? So that you can explain the uphill challenge of breastfeeding for mothers who are working.
Okay. I think it was good that you brought up that tweet, Sandra, because when I made that tweet, it was after I had a discussion with a group of women, right? I have my own personal experience. And also I was sitting with a group of women and they began to share their challenges, the breastfeeding challenges, or challenges basically around the whole maternity leave thing and with exclusive, because, you know, they were asking, how were you able to, you know, achieve exclusive breastfeeding? I wanted to. So when it comes to exclusive breastfeeding, I mentioned last week that every parent, every mother wants the best for their child. And the fact remains that breast milk is the best for a child in the first 6 months. So I don't know the parent that would see an option that will help their child thrive and also give them peace of mind, and then they will just ditch it. So for people who want to breastfeed, who desire to breastfeed, it becomes a challenge when they have to combine that with every other thing that has been going on in their life prior to having a baby. Because life continues. You have a child. Yes, there's a pause. But how long will this pause be for? And the bulk of this body falls on the woman. The bulk of the, because she's the one who is in charge, per se, of breastfeeding the child. So everybody looks up to her like, oh, this baby is crying. Where is the mother? That's the question. This baby is looking malnourished. Are you not feeding this child? Where is the mother? You're not doing enough. It feels like society keeps pointing fingers on the mother, and the same society expects a lot of women, a lot out of women when it comes to the workforce. And nobody's preferring solutions. Nobody wants to calm down and see, okay, what are the challenges and how can we help these women thrive? How can we help our children thrive? So when we had that conversation, I already knew, but it's just sparked something inside of me.
Hmm.
It was out of vexation, I actually made that tweet, because how on earth do you say exclusive breastfeeding? Beautiful, we agree.
Hmm.
And at the workplace, you're giving 3 months
maternity leave. Mm-hmm.
And this 3 months maternity leave, Sandra, is not, it doesn't cut across every institution, every yes. working institution.
Yes.
Some, especially for the private and informal
sector.
Sector.
Mm-hmm.
You see people who go back after 4 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's something I would like to term coercion or subtle threats that exist.
Mm.
These are my own words. Mm-hmm. And they come in this form where you say, you can have 3 months, or you can have 1 month paid maternity leave, or you can have 3 months unpaid maternity leave.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's that kind of thing.
That language, yes. So
yes.
That's why it's an invisible barrier, you know, because
yes.
you can't really hook it and say, you're doing me injustice, but it's right
you
there.
Guess.
It's very subtle, yeah,
so,
yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So people, I had someone 2 years ago, the post should still be up on my page on Instagram, I think. She's a medical doctor.
Okay.
And then she reached out to me. She was pregnant. Not, she hadn't even given birth.
Mm.
She was pregnant. And the this is a hospital.
Mm.
I mean, you would think, that we would understand, right?
Mm-hmm.
Now, she's a doctor and then she's pregnant. The management finds out. She didn't tell them. According to her, someone who she told someone who told, you know how it goes.
Mm-hmm.
Somehow it got to the management that she was pregnant, and she was let off.
Whoa.
She was let off. And what the CMD told her was, we're doing you a favor so that you can take time and take care of yourself. You know, pregnancy is not an easy time. So that, you know, so that's what I talk about when I say those subtle threats. You can't really place it. Someone could be like, they are trying to help you now.
Mm-hmm.
But you just cut her source of income.
Yeah.
Without her permission. And that's wrong. That's illegal.
Yeah.
So those
it's discriminatory, just, actually.
Yes, very discriminatory.
Yeah.
And this is just a fraction of the challenges that women experience in pregnancy and post-delivery.
Mm.
And especially during the postpartum period. So I was trying to find out how can a woman essentially achieve exclusive breastfeeding when there is not enough support, especially in the workplace. Support, by support we mean adequate and paid maternity leaves.
Mm-hmm.
I know that some people might argue, especially in the informal and informal sector and private sector, they could argue that, you know, this will increase the incidence of employing fewer women
because you think you're calculating, but yes, but these are all the issues. These are all the things that stand in the way of equality, because it almost seems like working mothers, especially corporate mothers, it almost seems like they're being forced to choose between exclusive breastfeeding and being in the workplace. So,
yes.
So I have to ask you, you are the public health expert. What should workplaces be doing differently?
Okay. So, firstly, it has to start with the policies. We have to set up policies that are favorable to women. Policies like maternity leaves in the first place. And, okay, you have a maternity leave. How adequate is the maternity leave? How accommodating is it? 3 months. Okay, fair. That's what's available. According to the Federal Civil Service, on paper. This is on paper. I don't know. Maybe when people call in, they could let us know if this works in their place. But on paper, 16 weeks maternity leave with full pay. That's what the Federal Civil Service, women employed in the Federal Civil Service are entitled to.
Right.
Yeah, that's what they're entitled to.
Right.
I wouldn't know if this works. I hope it does.
Hmm.
Then for...
Well, we have civil servants who are listening, so they'll call us and tell us if it works.
Yes, that's why I'm really interested in knowing if mm-hmm. this works. Mm-hmm. And then under the Labor Act, the country's Nigeria's Labor Act, you know, mothers employed outside the public sector are entitled to 12 weeks off and should be paid. Right?
Mm-hmm.
At least, or a minimum of half pay, if not full pay. Mm-hmm. That's what the law or the act says. The law says.
Right.
So this is fair, but in my opinion, and from what I know as a public health expert, I know that breastfeeding not only helps the child and the mother, it also helps the economy thrive. Because when a child is well breastfed, has enough contact with the mother, reduces the likelihood of coming down with those childhood diseases, which actually drain our economy on a yearly basis, like pneumonia, infant deaths. There are a lot of preventable infant deaths that, you know, breastfeeding could prevent. But when it comes to our work in Nigeria, there's a statistic I'm trying to remember So newborn diseases like pneumonia and diarrhea, which can develop when a child receives very little breast milk or too little breast milk, presently cost Nigeria almost 7 billion naira in annual medical treatment.
Wow.
So see how much, and this is according to a research by Alive and Thrive.
Wow.
Now, this, you can see how it affects our economy. I'm not talking about the mother now. I'm not talking about the child. We already know the benefits. Mm-hmm. We stated the benefits.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if the workplace or Nigeria as a whole understands how much it affects the economy, and they're actually having the mother, and also, of course, it puts up healthier babies out there. We are having healthier children that join the workforce. It's something that keeps the ripple effect.
Mm-hmm.
So if we have this in mind, our workplaces should have those maternity leaves, paid maternity leaves, adequate. For me, I would say 6 months. Mm-hmm. This is exclusive breastfeeding. And here's why I say 6 months. 6 months because when a woman is unavailable, when a woman is absent from her child, when a woman is also stressed by work, her milk supply drops. And that's what I was saying in that tweet.
Right.
Our emotions work hand in hand or hand in glove with our milk supply.
Right.
So when a woman is sad, when a woman is stressed physically, emotionally, otherwise, her milk supply has a high tendency of dropping. So how will she produce enough milk for her child? Now, we say, okay, go back to work. Fine. When you go back to work, do those workplaces have breastfeeding hours for the mothers where you can say, okay, this child can be breastfed?
Mm-hmm.
And if they have those hours, do they have breastfeeding or breast pumping rooms? Do they have crèches or rooms where these women can actually go with their babies and breastfeed without interrupting work?
Mm-hmm.
Do they have designated places where they can keep these children? For example, there are children that don't accept bottles, Sandra. There are some children that even when you express and try to bottle feed, they just don't like it. So they want that direct contact with their mother's breasts. In such case, how would she exclusively breastfeed? No matter how much she desires it, she can't achieve it because she can't take her child to a workplace. Yeah, she has to work. And even if she takes her child to work, where is she going to keep her child?
You know, there are people who have alleged that this exclusive breastfeeding sermon is a ploy to get women away from the workplace. What do you say to that?
I don't agree.
Okay.
Actually,
because think about it. We're telling women, and we're about to have a philosophical debate right now. So yeah. You're telling women exclusively breastfeed for 6 weeks, for 6 months, while also not providing an enabling environment for them to do it. By enabling environment, I mean they get pregnant, you hear about it, you fire them. In the case of your doctor friend, I mean some organizations giving you 1 month of pay paid, what's the word I'm looking for? 1 month of paid maternity leave, 2 months of non-paid, yeah. 1.5 months, 2.5 months of maternity leave. Some people don't even give the whole the full three months. Some people give you like 2.5 months of maternity leave, you know? So you have that happening. You have those who will not employ women at all. You have those who will employ women and tell women, hey, you have to wait for like three years before you get married. You can't get married as soon as we employ you. So there are all kinds of discriminatory practices that are happening. So when public health experts and the WHO says to women, oh, exclusive breastfeeding is the way, the truth, and the life, are we inadvertently saying to women, being in the workplace is not what you should be doing? Your duty is to be in the home with your children, making sure that you're producing, you know, boys and girls, men and women that will help the economy. Your job is to be at home, nurturing and being a mother. I don't know. What do you think, doctor?
Okay. I think I agree with you. I agree with you. And I mentioned these challenges. Now, here's the reason why I said exclusive breastfeeding was not created. I was answering the question. Mm-hmm. What you know, the statement you made, mm-hmm. it was not, I don't believe it was initially or primarily created. I'll use the word, I'm just using it loosely, the word created, you know, for women to...
To keep women back, to hold women back.
To keep women back. Mm-hmm. I wouldn't say that.
Okay.
Because, I mean, breastfeeding is a natural thing. Mm-hmm. Research has come. We've seen the benefits. Mm-hmm. We actually need it. Our children need it. Mm-hmm. And the women are the ones who can provide it. Mm-hmm. However, what I would say is, what I would say about that statement is, the workforce is exploiting that situation to push women back. I would use the word exploit. I would say they are putting it to push women. They are exploiting it.
Okay.
Because if you're not exploiting it, this is a natural process. You really can't do anything about it. It has come to stay.
Right.
So what you would do is, now to create an atmosphere, create an environment that can help women thrive despite this quote unquote situation they found themselves in. Because it has been happening. It is happening, and it will still happen, that women can successfully, exclusively breastfeed while working. Women are more, we are stronger than people realize. We are very strong, and we are multitaskers, and we are people who, when we put our mind to do something, as long as we are supported, as long as the environment is very comfortable and supportive for us, we can fly as high as we want. It's nothing, you know. So the challenge here is, we are not being supported. So many women have not been supported in the home front. They have very unsupportive partners. So even if their workplace is supportive, they come home and they're still not being supported at home. They are still expected to do all the house chores despite going to work. They are still expected to, I don't know, the domestic violence issues, different. There are different things in the home front that speak unsupportive partner. And of course, there are also those partners who don't want to help the woman rest. Example, expressing breast milk. One of the benefits of expressing breast milk is that a woman can be able to rest while someone is using the express breast milk to breastfeed the child, either in her absence, you know, especially in her absence. Her absence might be outside the house. It could be she's doing something else she wants to do, including rest or sleep. Now, a partner who says, ah, this baby is crying, come and carry your baby. You know, that's already, it's already disheartening. She just came back from work. So if the woman is being supported in the home front, and the workplaces can actually give full or partly full and partly half, maybe say, first 3 months full. I don't know why. Maybe because she's not fully in the office. They could give half, which is fair.
And hey, now that work from home is a thing, you can actually do 3 months fully you're away. Then the next 3 months you can work from home.
Do you understand? This thing you just said now is what I'm... Is someone who is willing. It's a
organizations that are willing.
HR that is willing. Yeah, they can. When they just that they don't want to, they've not put their backs into it. They've not even thought about it. as it were in the beginning, so shall it be, world without end.
That's why conversations like this are important. Chioma, hold that thought. Hold that thought. We'll take a break. When we come back from this break, we'll keep talking with Dr. Chioma Nwakama. Dr. Chioma Nwakama is a public health expert, and today we're talking about breastfeeding and the kind of support that women who are breastfeeding need, the kind of support they require to be able to achieve this sermon that we continue to preach: exclusive breastfeeding for 6 months to 2 years. Can it happen if the society as a whole doesn't throw their weight behind these women? I'm Sandra Ezekwesile. I've got information to share with you. Yes?
Yes. So, hello, guys. If you are in SS1, SS2, SS3, or junior secondary school, I have news for you, and I have news for your parents. So, if you're worried about which university to go outside of the country, I'm here to tell you that with Zenith Education, you can do this. So, Zenith Education is an education oriented organization that is willing to put your problems away and far away. Okay. So, there are a body of experienced counselors who can counsel you using standardized psychometric tests, which means that they're going to evaluate you and know your mental strengths and weaknesses, and they'll be able to put you where you're meant to be. This service is open to you if, you know, being a counselor is your calling as well, all right? The Zenith Education has a regular program to coach and train you intensively to become a professional career counselor and all that amazing stuff. So at the moment, there's a list of students who have traveled abroad, and they continue to grow, they continue to do life-changing things. If you want to do life-changing things, all you have to do is call 0909-235-0267 or call 0810-491-3744. And for physical inquiries, you can walk into their office at number 2A Akinwa Street off Unity Road, Ikeja, Lagos. This is open to 5,000 students, as Zenith Education has the capacity to offer study abroad and career counseling services for only 5,000 students, schools, and professionals. Now, one thing I want you to remember is that they are directly affiliated with many prestigious schools in India, Armenia, and, you know, Fiji. I don't know what you're waiting for, but you can enroll, and you can also enroll in modern courses of your choice when you make your inquiry. There's online bachelor's and master's degrees available for students and professionals who are not interested in traveling outside of the country. So whatever you want to do, they have you covered. So
you can visit their website at Zenith Educate. Hold on, let me get that again. You can visit their website at zenitheducareers.com. That's zenithedu careers.com. Have a nice day and keep pushing borders.
More news and information coming up. We'll be back in a moment.
Hey, Ben, Mr. Study Abroad, welcome back.
Thanks, Monet. I missed Accra, but I'll never forget the canals of the Netherlands and beautiful St. Louis in the U.S. I really feel like a global citizen.
That's the Webster Advantage, a quality American degree, small class sizes, top-notch campus facilities, and the chance to spend up to a school year in the U.S., Europe, or Asia.
Apply now to become a Webster University student for undergraduate studies or to pursue a master's program.
Call 0908-656-6875 and visit webster.edu.gh today.
99.3 Nigeria Info, your number one station for talk. Let's talk.
This is the Glass Ceiling, on Hard Facts.
What should you know about breastfeeding? Dr. Chioma Nwakama Kano is telling us all about it right here on The Glass Ceiling. I'm Sandra Ezekwesili. You're listening to Hard Facts on 99.3 Nigeria Info. Right now, we're talking about workplaces and employers and what they could be doing, what the entire society should be doing to support nursing mothers. Dr. Nwakama was talking about, you know, the partners at home, home and then the support that the nursing mother gets in the workplace. So you have two places where she should be receiving support. What's the partner doing at home? What are her employers doing in the workplace? And before the break, I was saying, well, these days that there's work from home, what HR could be doing is offer the 3 months that they offer regular, and then you have to go home and go be with your baby. And then you offer another 3 months where they can work from home. COVID was terrible, but it also came with lots of innovations. So that's something that you could do. That's a policy that you could employ. But of course, Dr. Wakama, when you talk to employers, they say, look, we can't afford to put all these amenities in place that you are talking about for nursing mothers. So they talk about cost of daycare rooms, for instance. They talk about cost of feeding rooms, for instance. And they point out that at any given time, maybe only one woman in the entire office is breastfeeding. Do you think that this is a reasonable pushback?
No, I don't. I don't think it's a reasonable pushback. Because every organization is different.
Okay.
So we have organizations where, I mean, hybrid working status can hold. You know, you work remotely and you can work physically. There are some organizations where you have to be present for things to thrive, right?
Mm.
So what I would say is, for every organization, all you have to do is sit back with your HR, with your staff, and with women, mothers too, who are in your organization, map out strategies to encourage the uptake of women, not just because you want to answer, you know, tokenism, you know, that, oh, everybody is employing women these days. So, you know, our organization, women are pro-women.
You know,
there's something I always tell, there's something I joke around. You say, women are encouraged to apply. So you're just doing it because it's trending. No. So these women come to your organization. How are you going to be able to keep them? Because statistics have shown that women that have paid maternity leaves, they are more likely to return to their workplaces happy and ready to put in the work, you know, following their maternity leaves.
Mm.
So there's that to consider.
Mm.
For people who are saying that at a time or at one point, it might just be one woman.
So there's no need for daycare room, no need for feeding room.
I'll say this. Why do you have toilet facilities in your place? Does everyone use the toilet at the same time?
Mm.
No. I could say we are not putting toilet because everybody doesn't. Some people don't even wee when they come to work.
Mm. You
know, some people know how to hold their urine in.
Mm-hmm.
Some people use toilet at home, and that it doesn't make any sense. Mm. These are necessary amenities. They should be there as long as it's an organization that plans to include women. Unless it's an organization that says, oh, no mothers allowed.
Mm.
Oh, okay, that totally makes sense. That's your organization. I don't know why you're
that's
doing
your policy.
It. That's your policy. But if you want to include women, you have to take into cognizance the challenges, the peculiar challenges that come with womanhood, motherhood. You have to put it in there. If it's one woman in 2 years, oh, beautiful. It could be a room that could be, it could be a makeshift room.
Mm.
It could be whatever it is. That's why I said every organization is different. So find out, what do you have?
Mm-hmm.
How can we manage your
make
leverage utilities we have to help these women, you know, thrive in this workplace.
Mm.
Those are conversations that, you know, human resources should be having.
Mm.
The management should be having.
Mm.
Not just anything goes. We have this anything goes attitude. Oh, okay. Ah, okay. Oh, she don't carry belly. Okay. Ah,
well done. No, well done.
I don't agree with that when people say having a room like that. Then about the crutch issue.
Mm-hmm.
So let's say you are an organization that you don't have enough space.
A lot of
that.
Them say they can't afford it. It's expensive to set up a crutch. Yes.
Yes, it is.
Mm-hmm.
You can't afford it.
Mm-hmm.
You want to tell me you can't see? I'm having different options in my head. So when they say two heads are better than one.
Mm.
Find out organization. You can't be the only one having that challenge.
Okay.
So research. find out in the world or the global level, mm-hmm. organizations that had this kind of challenge, mm-hmm. what did they do?
Dr. Nwakama, I'm a small business owner. You expect me to open creche inside my small business?
No, I'm not saying open creche. I'm coming. I'm going somewhere. Mm. So what did they do to solve this? Mm-hmm. You mustn't have a creche within. How about partnering with a nearby creche? How about looking for... There are different solutions I can't actually... There are different solutions that are available right now. Partnering with a nearby creche is one. That, okay, there's a creche nearby. In my primary school, right? Mm. They didn't have a creche. This was ways back when I was in primary school.
Okay.
There was a creche beside. That's where the teachers go and keep their children. Okay, we have schools. Remember staff school. Why do we have staff schools?
Mm.
Right? Staff schools are there. Those ones, they can afford it to have a staff school within. Mm. Mm. There are people that are working, even with my workplace, there are places people tend to put their children close to their work areas.
Mm-hmm.
There is a particular school where when I was working in Abia State, it was just really close. So almost all the staff of the hospital had their children there.
Mm.
There's some kind of partnership. Oh, so if you're working with this hospital, there's some kind of partnership agreement financial that they have.
Mm.
So I mean, there are different
There are
ways.
Different options.
There are different options.
You can't just throw your hand up and say, oh, more, no do.
You get, that's the challenge. People have already resigned and said, oh, nothing can be done. And you've not put on your thinking cap.
Mm.
You've not sat down. You've not researched.
Perhaps,
if you genuinely want to help someone.
Perhaps because back to that point that I made earlier on, people who don't want women in the workplace to begin with. People think women should be at home raising children by themselves,
yes.
while their husbands are out in the workplace. Well, you know, you, ma, what are you doing outside? Why are you and your husband working? Who is now raising the children if you and your husband are outside the house working? You know, and so because of beliefs like that, ideas like that, there's no serious incentive to want to make it conducive. If anything, they want to make it as uncomfortable as possible for you so that you say, well, let me go and be a mommy in the house. What am I doing this? What this career that I'm doing? What am I using it for, self? You know, how do you change that mindset? That becomes a huge part of this conversation. And that's also something that you guys do in public health, behavioral change communication, right? So how does a mindset like that begin to change, doctor?
Okay. The primary level of prevention is education. Yes, as you said, so there's that behavioral change, you know, aspect. Most people will, I think I mentioned it last week, people are more likely to do something when you help them realize the benefits it has to them, why they need to do something, as opposed to just telling them to do something. You know, just like telling a child, oh, don't put your hand, or don't grab that hot plate. You know, don't jump into an open body of water. There's that interest. There's that interest that just comes up when they want to do that exact thing you told them not to do as children. And then when you explain to them why they shouldn't do a particular thing, or what could happen if they don't do it, they are more likely. Of course, they're always stubborn children and they're always stubborn people. But then they are more likely to follow through with whatever you're telling them to do. So as regards maternity leave and workplace inclusion, workplace support, I think the same thing can come into play. Yeah.
Okay.
People are educated. The organizations are educated. There are different organization forces and what they call them, help me, bodies, bodies where they have work, like, okay, we have the labor union, unions, that's what I want to say.
Okay.
Unions.
Okay.
So when you have those workforces, they have unions, they have associations, they have meetings, they could liaise, their leaders could liaise with public health experts and people who are mothers. They are, aside public health experts, they are people who run organizations that are focused on maternity health, you know, NGOs and the like, partner with them to come and talk to your people or talk to fellow organization leaders
and come up with great workplace policies.
And they could even have workshops. They could have workshops where they brainstorm together on how to improve their workplaces and make their workplaces more favorable. I think how it will help them.
I think another place that you know should be looked at as well is what's the word I'm looking for? Labor laws. You know, and that's where it sucks that we don't have more women represented in House of Assemblies, the National Assembly. Because if you had more women represented in these corridors of power, they could take a look at our labor laws as they currently are and try to amend it so that it takes care of women who are it takes care of women who are there's somebody else who's on the link and their mic is on. Could they please mute their mic? Bemi, I think that's you. Please mute your mic. Thank you. Okay, I don't know what's happening there. Bemi, please mute your mic. Okay. All right. We're going to try and solve that problem. Once we do, we'll keep the conversation going. Sorry about that, Dr. Chiamaka. Bemi's my next guest for 5 p.m. I think she's joined early and doesn't realize that her mic is live. Bemi Sola, can you put your mic off, please? I'm not even sure she can hear that I'm telling her to put her mic off.
I think she has.
Okay, great. Okay, fantastic. So yes, I was saying that that's another reason why the push for women's participation in politics is so high, because if you had more women making these decisions about our laws, you could have better laws that protect the rights of women in the workplace, working mothers in the workplace. How does conversation like that begin? How do we even begin to fix that part of this problem?
Yeah, it's good that you mentioned that, Sandra, because I was going to talk about policies and women representation in politics. And it also starts with education, because the truth is that there are a lot of forces, I'll use the word forces as against people, a lot of forces that would love to see women sit. They will say it out, right? Mm. How I always judge people by their action, not just your words. Mm. You come out and say, oh, we want more women. We want women to thrive. We want our women to work. Okay, but what are you doing? That's how I know whether you really want them. What are you doing to encourage these women to thrive? So, as I said earlier, people are exploiting this particular... I wouldn't call it a loophole because it's a natural thing, but they're exploiting breastfeeding as a whole to try to push women back. And there are a lot of conversations that come up like that. So, for women representation in politics is really important. And it also starts with education. We are in election season, and it's a perfect time to have that conversation. It's election season. Down to the ward level in politics, how many women are registered party members and how many women are included? Because I have some kind of political background, family-wise and personally.
Okay.
Because I was in some student politics coming up.
Okay.
So from then, I can say that whenever I hear that a woman is in politics, you know, majority of the women in politics, I'm not talking about the outliers. Women in politics, you see them as the party crooners. Per se, they are like the praise singers, the ones who blow the horns. We're just there to add flavor.
The ones who come and dance. I'm so ashwebi.
You get, you know that exactly. And then I'm like, okay, can't somebody just tell these women that you can be more than this? I'm not saying even the women should realize, of course, but we are coming from this is a patriarchal society. We are moving out,
right?
But it is what it is. And most of these women don't even know they have this access. They don't even know they can. It has always been the men. So we need more education. Those who are the helm of affairs, you know, they could tell them, oh, do this. The time I contested, I'll just use myself. First time I contested as a student, it was one of my coursemates that even made me, because normally I'm the one that will ginger you, I'll help you campaign. That's me. I'm vocal, I'll help you win election. Then someone said, oh, you can help other people win election, and you actually have ideas. You help you are sharing ideas with people, what telling them what they should do when they get there. How about you? Why don't you try and push yourself? I'm like, no. But then he supported me and sat me down and he bought me, how he helped me, why I ran for the first election. He bought me the form with his money. I'm like, he has committed his money. Okay. You know? And that was how I went and I won. Mm. It was a narrow thing. Mm. But then from there till now, I'm still speaking policy because I was in the representative council in my school,
okay,
you know, in my department.
Mm-hmm.
Until now, that's what piqued my interest in policies, mm-hmm, in health policies.
Mm-hmm.
So we need more people like that, my friend, back then, mm-hmm, who can encourage women,
more women,
and also open conversations, not just one-on-one, open conversations, mm-hmm, everywhere,
mm-hmm,
using, leveraging every medium to encourage women.
Because, I mean, who would have thought that breastfeeding and politics will exist in the same sentence?
Do you understand?
Yeah.
But it does.
Yeah.
It does. I remember a case where in Nigeria here, I remember a case where a female lawmaker had her nanny, I don't know if you remember that story some years back, her nanny stood her up or something and she had to come with her baby to
the
house.
Yes, I remember. And they told her to get out. I remember. Mm-hmm.
Like, wow, this is a non-issue.
Right.
Like, this is a non-issue.
Right.
It should be something that should be encouraged. Oh, wow. Okay, fine. Maybe the children could disrupt the proceedings.
Mm-hmm.
Can we find somewhere? But not to the extent of working her out and embarrassing her the way they did. Those are issues that we should be. And as you said, if we had more female representation, I don't think that would have happened.
Mm.
So we need to have these conversations. And when we have women who are actually there, and women who are actually there, they are women who are actually there.
Mm-hmm.
They don't need to pander to the pop, to the crowd, and just try and do what everybody is doing.
Mm-hmm.
It takes one voice.
Mm-hmm.
Speak out, garner support at the level at your.
But you,
level.
But if you also
women should not be the ones.
But if you let's say that you're like there are just seven women in a House of Assembly or House of Reps or Senate, you're just seven in number. You know, that's not enough of a number to change much, especially if you want to change those things in the direction of women. Because take a look at the gender equality bill that's been in the House for a long time, the Violence Against Women Act that they had to change to Violence Against Persons Act to pass, you know. So there's a lot that the women who are in the legislature try to do, but because they simply do not have the numbers, it's an uphill battle. But we'll keep pushing, we'll keep trying, we'll keep fighting. We've got a question here who says, my baby refused to take breast milk except I extract the breast milk, and he stopped breast milk in less than 3 months. What might be the cause, please? This is an interesting question because my mom said the same thing about my twin brother and I. She says we didn't want to keep breastfeeding after 3 months. You know, she'd put her breast and we'll remove her mouth and put our nose there. And so they had to start giving us solid food. So what could be the reason why something like that would happen, doctor?
Okay, so that could happen in children. Mm-hmm. As I even mentioned earlier, some children prefer the direct breastfeeding.
Mm-hmm.
Some children prefer only bottles. Then some are lucky enough, you know, to take both.
Mm.
And then there are children who stop on time.
Mm.
But in such cases, I always say before you do introduce anything,
mm-hmm,
communicate with your doctor,
hmm,
and communicate with your lactation consultant.
Okay.
Because there might be something you're not doing right.
Hmm.
There might be something you could do to help the children continue breastfeeding. But in our time, most times when that happens, the first point of call usually is the grandmothers and the elderly women who are there. They are, it's happened to me. Just give them pap. Even pap, he don't see, he's already will not collect breast again. So you get, where are we getting our information from? So for some children who have had such issues, sometimes when you come to the doctor, you find out, okay, it could be positioning. It could be an issue of positioning.
Okay.
Children don't talk. The way they express themselves is by either crying or their body gesticulations and all that. So because they can't talk, you can't exactly say this child is tired until you've exhausted all options. So
mm-hmm,
I would say, please make sure you exhaust all options,
mm-hmm,
before you can categorically say that this child is done.
Mm-hmm.
And when that happens, when you speak with your pediatrician your midwives, your you know, the healthcare personnel who are trained for such cases around you, mm-hmm. when you speak with them, they will let you know how to progress from there.
Okay.
They let you know what is safe to introduce, because mm-hmm. Even for a 6 month old, mm-hmm. when you start introducing complementary foods, mm-hmm. I mean solid foods, mm-hmm. there are some that you start with, there are some that are not first line.
Okay.
There are some you introduce from 8 months, not 6 months. Okay. Talk more of giving that to a 3 month old.
Okay.
So there's just a whole lot when it comes to feeding children generally,
okay.
that I can't say. So it's a peculiar case.
Okay.
What might be causing a child to do that in child A might be different in child B.
B.
I'd say go to your doctor, speak to your doctor, and if that's the case, I mean, you look for the next available healthier option
mm-hmm.
to start your child on.
Okay.
But then always keep trying to give breast milk. Never stop completely, because okay. some children might stop at 3 months, and at 4 months, they start craving it again.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that happened with my baby. At some point, he stopped directly breastfeeding.
Mm-hmm.
I was really worried, mm-hmm. but he was accepting the bottle.
Okay.
I found out he was accepting the bottle. Mm-hmm. And by the time he got to 5 months,
mm-hmm.
it was as if there was a crusade on, like a crusade in his brain. That
like, I want breast again.
Exactly. So with children, you can never tell. Just make sure you've exhausted all options.
Elijah from Ricotton says, my wife's situation is that one of her breasts stopped producing milk while the other one does. What could be the cause?
Okay, top of my mind, one of the most likely things is that could be the preferred breast. So okay. every mother or every... Yes, let me explain.
Hmm.
So because of positioning, everybody,
hey, Ben,
even if you're right-handed, you're left-handed,
hmm.
people usually have a particular side that they are more comfortable feeding the child on.
Hmm.
Or a particular child side that the child prefers to feed on. Now, it's now left on the mother to alternate both breasts during feeding to make sure that both breasts are equal in size and also producing milk, because it's a supply, a demand and supply thing. With breastfeeding, the more you breastfeed, the more the breast produces milk. So that milk, that breast that is producing more milk is the breast that the child usually sucks. If they can hear me, I'm sure they can affirm that that's the particular side of the breast most likely that the baby is always sucking from.
Okay.
So from the word go, women are encouraged to alternate both breasts. When the child completely feeds on this one, the next feeding time should be on the next breast.
Mm-hmm.
Try, because children adapt to what you show them. They don't know anything now, so they don't know right from left.
Mm-hmm.
So when you keep alternating, they are used to it. But if you're always putting them on one side, they get comfortable on that side, and you also get comfortable on that side.
Mm.
So another thing they could do is they could try, she could try, or persons who have this challenge could try pumping.
Mm-hmm.
They could get a breast pump and also pump. It can encourage
the other side to produce
the flow, yes, okay. on that side, yes.
We've got Peter Yorinde,
your lactation consultant.
Okay, we've got Peter Yorinde who says, kindly help me tell our men to leave this thing for babies. Oh, my wife's breast, my wife's breast did not dispense in the first 2 weeks, it was our first. It was somehow depressing to her. I had to be there for her to encourage her that she has done a great job already. What is the truth in the contraceptive nature of breastfeeding? Well, we've talked about that already. Okay, we've got other messages here on WhatsApp, but we've got just 2 minutes before I have to let our good doctor go. Let me see. Here's a message that says, how about starting a creche business that caters to external customers while catering to your own staff? Tobe from Moe with that suggestion there. Tobe, thank you very much. We've got a message here. I'm very happy to hear that our health practitioners are campaigning for exclusive breastfeeding for a minimum of 6 months and maximum of 2 years. And then he goes on to quote the Quran. It's a really long message there. Unfortunately, I don't have the time to read the entire thing. Here is... okay, this is your personal message to Mr. Yorinde. I'm not going to read that message on my air. let's see. Okay. There's a gentleman here called Chris. Chris, I'm going to ban you from sending us messages because you're being very rude on our WhatsApp. So you're not allowed to send us messages anymore on WhatsApp. Dr. Chioma Nwakama Akano, public health expert, talking to us about breastfeeding. We're going to have her back on the show in the future. We're going to focus a lot on women's health, young girls, teenagers, young women, older women. We'll talk about all of the things that concern the health of the female. So Dr. Chema is going to be my official, you know, women's health consultant on the show. I don't have money. I can't pay you, ma. Sorry, ma.
It's fine.
But we do hope that when we call, you'll answer us. Thank you so much for giving us your time today. I really appreciate it.
Thank you, Sandra. Always a pleasure.
All right.
Thank you.
Lagos, we'll take a break. When we come back from this break, let's talk about Nigeria's fiscal situation. Just like the glass ceiling, we started this conversation last week. We had two guests on the show, and they talked to us about what changes the CBN should make to monetary policy. If you missed that conversation from last Wednesday, I suggest you go to our website and listen again. Our website is nigeriainfo.fm. But today we're going to focus on the fiscal policy of Nigeria. What changes should the finance ministry make to fiscal policy? That conversation is coming up in a few seconds, actually. I'm Sandra Ezekwesili. This is Hard Facts on 99.3 Nigeria Info.
This is The Voice Note on 99.3 Nigeria Info. Let's talk.
You know,
I want to assume that you would run because I want to give the listeners context for the conversation.
In 2019, you were running mate to Atiku Abubakar. What did you learn then that you will not repeat this time?
Yes, when is the president coming out to address us?
There's a few things. One, I have a burden and a passion for young people.
The fact that you have elected a man does not mean then you begin to order him around. The president will do whatever is good for the country at any given time.
Mr. Adesina, isn't the president responsible to the people?
What should the next president do to root out stakeholders who are complicit?
You fire them. Those that need to be fired, are fired.
It's looking like the brand new Chelsea, attacking with so much fluidity. Now, what can you say about that, Martin? I know you follow Chelsea quite closely.
I live close to the Chelsea training ground. That's what you mean by that. I'm not a Chelsea.